from meager beginnings as an adolescent ambulance washer in Moose Jaw, Saskatchewan, to a decade-long legacy of bringing you breaking news before it makes the news, broadcasting live from the studios of Scared Monkeys Radio Network via C-band satellite W3-957, Access Communications Channel 7, and worldwide via digital streaming audio at ScaredMonkeysRadio.com, it's the Dana Pretzer Show. And now, your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, it's been 3 years since Natalie Holloway took a trip to Aruba. It's been 3 years since Natalie Holloway has been seen or heard from. And we've covered this topic many, 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 many times here on the program. What I thought I'd do tonight is bring on a couple of investigators. We'll start out with Clint Van Zandt. Of course, you know Clint as a former FBI hostage negotiator, behavioral analyst, author, investigator, you name it. He's done it. And he's very familiar with the case, and he's also running into some rough weather where he's at, so we're glad to have Clint. Hi, Clint.
Hey, good evening. Yeah, it is. I mean, that was, you know, tough times. Aruba for Natalie Holloway, I can't compare my condition to hers, but I've just spent the last hour in a bathroom in the basement. Jeez. Which is about the most secure place we have in our house, as tornadoes are going north and south of us here, so we're in the middle of a lot of weather right now.
No, that's not good. So stay safe, my friend. 3 years, I know you covered the Holloway case pretty much right from the beginning. Did you ever think that 3 years later you and I would be talking about it and still no conclusion?
Well, I really did, unfortunately. You know, I was down in the river right afterwards. NBC, MSNBC sent me down to cover the story, and I was down there for a couple of weeks. I went to all the, you know, alleged crime scenes, various locations. And, you know, for those true believers, too, at the time I was going down, I had a number of psychics who heard I was going down through NBC, MSNBC. They told me exactly where she would be found. Of course, three or four different psychics told me, you know, at least three or four different spots. I went down there, and in all honesty, everything else I did, I went to those locations. And I can tell you firsthand, she wasn't where the psychics told me to. So for those out there whose answer to me for 3 or 4 years has been, why don't you just contact a psychic? Why don't you get Sylvia Brown? The answer is no. In my entire career as an FBI agent, as a profiler, as an investigator, I've never seen a psychic work one time. I don't want to get up on the soapbox on that one, Dana, but I've had that ground into my head so much that sometimes I want to get it up front and deal with it right away.
Absolutely, and I don't blame you. You and I are both old school, and I guess that leads me into the investigation itself. You know, Investigation 101, you and I have talked about it many times. Here we are 3 years later. How important was the first 24 or 48 hours of this investigation?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, and I know you and everybody else out there who's either in law enforcement or who's close to law enforcement by studying cases, and I know there's a lot of people that are very good at that out there, that's where you make or break a case. The first 12, 18, 24 hours, the crime scene that you do, the interviews, locking your subjects and witnesses in the interviews as soon as you can, recovering forensic evidence of crime scenes. If you don't get those things, I mean, I guess the analogy, and it's rather a poor analogy, but it's still, if you look at the JonBenet Ramsey case,
yep,
that same thing. The witnesses were not locked in. The crime scene was not secure. And that case, of course, is still cold, and here we are a decade later. But, you know, we're talking about Natalie Holloway. And, you know, it's still, every few months, I would, you know, I'd be on a television show, or I'd talk to Natalie's mother, Beth, or I'd talk to a relative or something. There was a time when Natalie's relatives would call me up, and they'd bounce ideas off me. And as you know, when I was in Aruba, I had a chance to talk to one of the Calpol brothers, who, to me, are still two of the three prime suspects that have never gotten off square one, as far as I'm concerned. And I remember at the time talking to one of the Calpol brothers, and I asked him, I said, you know, you think this case will ever go away, whether Natalie is found or not? And he said, no, he said, it'll never go away. He said, Beth will never get it. He says, she'll stay at us forever. Well, I think Beth, Natalie's mother, tried to do that. I mean, you know, she could be no more tenacious. I mean, she lost her marriage, I think,
yep,
her second marriage, because of that the time that she spent in Aruba and the time she spent trying to get her daughter back. And, you know, I guess there is no worse position for a parent when they can't get that terrible word that you and I know is closure, when you can't find out what happened to your child, to your grandchild, to your spouse, to your significant other. You know, it's one thing where you have to grieve and deal with someone, with a loved one who's died in an accident or has been murdered. But when you don't know, and when those stories, like when I was on Dr. Phil about a year and a half, 2 years ago or so, and the story was being floated out that Natalie was had been taken captive, that she was held on some third world country island as a sex slave. And, you know, I caught Beth and I were both on Dr. Phil that day, and I took Beth aside and I said, Beth, before we go on, I said, you know, they're going to roll this story out there. And I said, please do not believe it.
Yeah.
I said, the FBI, the CIA, other investigative agencies, we've run these things down. There is no truth to it. And I remember at the time Beth says, well, you know, Clint, I gotta have hope. I said, Beth, you can have hope, but don't have false hope. And I think that's the challenge that has confronted her and the investigators, at least back in the States, the frustrated FBI agents who went to Aruba and who weren't allowed to work the case because the Aruban police shut them out of it, wouldn't let them into it. The private investigators, the people who follow your show so closely and others who have a feel for who the suspects were and what was going on in the case. I mean, you know, to me, again, we have never gotten away from the two Calpo brothers. We have never gotten away from Joran van der Sloot. We've come full circle. But those three, and especially if you, you know, recall very well about 6 months ago where the Dutch undercover reporter got somebody up close to Joran van der Sloot, and then they taped his conversations in the car, and he all but admitted he had something to do with Natalie's death.
Right.
And the judge in Aruba says, well, this guy's lied so many times, we can't tell truth from fiction, so we can't hold that against him. So, I mean, you can't even admit to murder and get charged with it down there, it looks like.
That is so true. And if you're just joining us, Clint Van Zandt is here, and we're looking at the Natalie Holloway investigation 3 years later. You know, we've used the term corruption, and we used the term bungling, and just inability, inexperience, you name it. The investigators, the people that have had their hands tied because of the lack of cooperation from Aruba, Clint. But yet you still see stories being floated out there. Now there's one that's going around about a telephone bill, and Beth was on her way to Aruba before she was even advised that Natalie was missing. All this speculation and wild crap, it does nothing to solve the case, but it also must be terrible on the family to have to sit and stomach this sort of stuff.
Well, I think it is. And, you know, there are people who float out rumors and innuendo, and you say it's not true. Well, if someone has made up their mind they want to believe something, if someone wants to, you know, for some reason, we love conspiracies, whether it be the JFK conspiracy or the Waco conspiracy or the Natalie Holloway conspiracy. I mean, people want to believe there is this massive secret government, family, police, money, Jewish, whatever it is, organization out there that has corrupted everything but that is conspiring against us all, and that somehow all of these people were able to come together. And, you know, it's like when TWA 847 went down, and I got into a... I was being interviewed one time by Pierre Salinger, who was former President Kennedy's press secretary, and Pierre Salinger was the one who floated out the theory that that TWA flight, after it left New York City, had been shot down with a Navy missile fired from a U.S. naval ship. And he floated that story out, and there were people who absolutely, positively wanted to believe that the U.S. Navy would shoot a plane down, and then that everybody from the seaman recruit aboard that ship to the director of the FBI, the chief of police of the NYPD, and every other investigator and file clerk, and that everybody was part of this mass conspiracy. And I said, you know, the issue is that it's not that the Navy could not have accidentally shot that plane down. It's that you cannot get that many people to shut their mouth, government and civilian life. You can't make a conspiracy like that work because people won't keep their mouth shut. And I think that's the same thing when we talk about Natalie Holloway. The idea that Beth was on a plane and heading down before Natalie disappeared. You know, people roll that out because they want to believe something different. Whether they want to... When I was down in Aruba, I had anywhere from taxi drivers to cops, Aruban cops, that would tell me, oh, we know absolutely that Natalie and her mother didn't get along together, so what really happened is that the Calpo brothers and Joran van der Sloot, actually, Natalie came to them and said, please smuggle me off this island because my mother was so oppressive to me that all they did was help her escape an oppressive mother. And there were people who swore that was the absolute truth, although there was nothing to back it up whatsoever.
Absolutely, just utter crap. You look at van der Sloot and this recent confession and other confessions. This case has been so on again, off again, right from day one with the evidence and the arrest and the release. It's like a bad fishing show with catch and release. We all hope and we hold back hope that someday a case like this will go to court. I've always said that justice is served many different ways, and justice can be served best by bringing Natalie home. But in your professional opinion, Clinton, as someone in law enforcement for a long time, do you ever see this case with Aruba being Aruba coming to fruition, actually going to court?
I don't, I guess, Dana. I just don't. Number one, I mean, from day two or three, at least, when I got down there and started looking around and went up to the lighthouse and took the path she allegedly went and talked to the people there. I mean, I pretty much came to the opinion that she was probably a victim of homicide or an accidental death. Now, let me draw that line. I think the line is that she could well, I mean, you know, witnesses have suggested, yes, she was there. She was dancing at Carlos and Charlie's, where I've been many a time, and that she was drinking like a fish, way too much for somebody her age and her physical shape, that she was allowing guys to do shots out of her navel up in the bar. All of that is probably true. All of that is probably true. She probably was a young girl. She was sowing her wild oats. She was dancing. She was drinking. Then I think what happened is that somebody slipped her a Rufinol. Somebody slipped her a date rape drug. Yep. And I think the combination of the booze that she ingested on her own with the possibility of a date rape drug allowed somebody to take her out of that bar and take her away. Then what I think in my scenario happened was that there was an attempt of some type of physical assault, and the combination of the physical force that was exerted on her, the alcohol and the Rufinol or whatever it was, that combination, I think her body just expired. And then whoever was with her, who I still, you know, I have a hard time believing it was somebody other than a combination of the three primary suspects. Then they said, oh my God, this girl has died. What are we going to do? They reached out perhaps to somebody else who had a boat. They took that girl out about a mile. They dropped her in the water. And you get off that island about a mile and you're in the water and the currents catch you. And the next spot you're going to wind up, if the sharks don't get you, is the Panama Canal. So the idea of sending Dutch F-16s flying over the island and looking for bodies and having search dogs digging in the sand around the lighthouse. I mean, it's an island. Where are you going to put a body? You're not going to plant it in the sand. You're going to take it out to sea. So if that scenario has any basis of potential fact in it whatsoever, I don't think we're ever going to see Natalie's body found if she either died or was a victim of a homicide and her body disposed of. And as, you know, van der Sloot's father was alleged to have said one time, no body, no case. And in Aruba, even if one of the three primary suspects would actually come forward and say, okay, I can't take it, it's just too much pressure on me, I have to tell the truth, his story in and of itself would not get him a pass. He would have to, whoever would confess to this in a conspiracy, would be eligible for the same type of trial and or penalties. And these guys have told so many stories so many different times. Again, as the judge said in this last undercover case by the media, where van der Sloot allegedly spoke about his part in her disappearance. They've lied so many times we can't believe it. So, Dana, I find it hard for me to believe that the law enforcement there now, number one, wants to solve the case, number two, is capable of solving it, and number three, that there is enough evidence for proof beyond a reasonable doubt to allow the case to be either indicted and or prosecuted and have a conviction over it. I just don't see that happening.
And I think you said it best when you said even in Aruba, or only in Aruba, you can confess to murder and not be tried. It's it's unbelievable. You know, the red flags that all popped up and the outrage, not only from the family, but from everyone that watched it, the undercover sting operation on Vandersloot, the Peter DeVries television show, and I interviewed Peter on this program, and you and I are aware of what we call jailhouse confessions, or wiring up an informant to go in and get the goods on someone, and the admissibility of those sorts of cases in North America, and seeing this whole undercover sting being brought out on television. Did that hurt it by coming out on TV before it went to the prosecutor, or was there just no way this was going to go anywhere anyway?
You know, there was an old TV show years ago. In fact, it's a movie coming out as a movie now. It's called Get Smart.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
The lead character was Maxwell Smart,
yeah.
Kind of a quacky CIA-like operative. But it was kind of a fun show. And I remember one scene in that always was the cone of silence.
Yep.
Would want to talk amongst themselves, and they would bring down this plastic dome so that nobody else could hear them, but then they couldn't hear themselves talk either.
Yep.
And the thing never worked. Well, my career as an investigator, you know, in the FBI, you always wanted a cone of silence as far as the media is concerned. It's like, let us go out and work the case. Let us gather the evidence. Let us lock the witnesses in without being tampered or contaminated by the media, and we can make this case go, perhaps. But, you know, I guess I would have liked to have seen that operation done perhaps in concert with the Dutch authorities,
yep.
Dutch police, with the Aruban police, or something. I mean, I would have rather seen it done, you know, the way it was done than not done at all. But that didn't seem to facilitate to move the investigation on any whatsoever. It just gave it a more circus-like atmosphere. And the problem with this circus is that somebody is likely to have died, and nobody's going to be held responsible for it, at least in the courts, maybe in the court of public opinion. But again, you know, in Aruba, the last thing I knew of, the Kalpo brothers are still down there. They go to Carlos and Charlie's. They're hanging around. You know, life hasn't changed much, and it's the country. Aruba has moved on. American tourists go down there now. They go to Carlos and Charlie's like it's a tourist spot to see where Natalie's last night was and move on again. So it's amazing that, you know, here 3 years later, we've got 18-year-olds going there now who were 14 or 15 at least when that happened, who may not even know this story and go down, and now they are potential victims of something similar to that, too. Those type of activities go on. I remember being down in Aruba and talking both to Aruban investigators who I thought, you know, were trying to do something and just their hands were tied, and private investigators from America who were down there who said, you know, it's kind of SOP down here for some of these kids, some of the Aruban kids that are there. They said they hang out in the bars. The Americans come into bars. They pick up the girls. They slip them roof and all. They take them out. They become a victim of some type of physical or sexual assault. The girls go to the police. They complain. The police say, you know, your plane's leaving tomorrow morning. You probably ought to get on the plane. Just count this as a lesson learned.
Yep.
You know, you lived. And then this happens over and over again, and every day and every week, a new plane and a new ship of nice, fresh victims show up again.
Yep. Yeah, and that's so true, and certainly the government of Aruba has not done anything to help that situation, and I've said it many times, Natalie Holloway is in a much better place right now, and it certainly isn't the island of Aruba. Clint, thank you. Stay safe, and hopefully the weather will just blow by you.
Thanks, Dana.
Take care. Bye-bye. That's Dr. Clint Van Zandt, former FBI agent, current security specialist, and correspondent on MSNBC. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back with another Holloway investigator. He's a former Secret Service agent, Art Wood. And then a little bit later on, we know him as Jossie Manser, the managing editor of Diario. You're listening to The Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio. We'll be right back.
It's The Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. And now back to the show.
Okay, we're going to continue on with our look back at the Natalie Holloway investigation now 3 years later. And someone who's very close to the investigation is former Secret Service agent, current private investigator, Art Wood. Hi, Art.
Hi, Dana. How are you?
I'm fine. Welcome back to the program. It's been 3 years. You and I have talked about this case many, 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 many times. Did you think that we'd still be talking about it 3 years later?
Well, you know what? Nothing surprises me. I still think this case can be solved. We all know that that we're real close as far as what happened in Holland, and we all know that Durham did it, and it's just a matter of the prosecutor going forward and doing something about it.
And that's all we can hope for in a situation like this, because there's been so much mishope and so much false hope that, you know, you take and look at what's out there now, and there's been some news stories about, and I'm going to talk to Jossie Manser here in a few minutes, about a tennis shoe being found and other things. And the case has been relatively quiet in the media, Art, but there's been things going on in the background, maybe. Have you heard anything? Can you share with us?
Well, I could share with you the fact that there's some witnesses come forward that saw Huron at a different part of the island, not close to the fishermen's huts, but more inland toward that pond that was drained, and a different pond than that, actually. And he was going down the street with no shoes, or one shoe and on and one shoe off. I know that the prosecutor and the police have, but they wouldn't drain that new pond. They didn't do anything to find the missing tennis shoe. They're just some. It all corresponds. Dan, it all corresponds with what we know happened. We know that Natalie died in the hands of Huron Vandersloot. And whether it happened at the beach or at a pond, it doesn't really matter.
Right.
What matters is who got rid of the body. We know that they took it out to sea. You know, it's frustrating for Dave and Beth and everybody else that loves Natalie. I'm preaching to the choir. I know that you care.
Yeah. You know, and we do, and all my listeners and everyone involved, the Scared Monkeys and all that, we're here for them. But it's to the point now where, if something comes out, Art, and I think you understand this, we're almost expecting to be disappointed that it just turned out to be a sour lead. Would it be better right now that if there was a way to clamp down on any information, to just let it fall, let the pieces fall where they may, and hopefully we can at least bring Natalie home, if not get these three gutter scum, I'm going to say something else, but I can't hear, to court?
Dana, listen, I don't agree with that at all, and the reason is that I think that Huron made a confession on national television. I think that a tape that was made where he confessed to Natalie dying on the beach and the fact that they got rid of the body was enough for the prosecutor to go forward.
Right.
I just don't know what's taking them so long.
You know, just before my interview with you, I had Clint Van Zandt on, and I think Clint said it best. He said, even, or only in Aruba, can you confess to murder and nothing happened to you. Your thoughts on that statement?
Well, I'm waiting for the prosecutor to do something about it. I think that Huron did confess. Your listeners and myself and you and everybody else in the world that has followed this case knows that what he said on those tapes was true.
Right.
Did he mean to kill Natalie? There's nothing on that tape that convinced me that he did.
Right.
But he certainly didn't mean to save her, Dana. He certainly didn't take any steps to save this young girl's life. And that's what bothers me.
I mean, he needs to be prosecuted. Is it first-degree murder? Probably not. But it is something that he needs to answer to.
And then the part that bothers me the most is not helping her and then taking her and throwing her away like a piece of garbage.
Right, absolutely. That's what I said. He didn't mean to kill her, but he didn't mean to save her.
Absolutely. That part just absolutely drives me around the bend. Now, just to refresh my listeners' memory, this is Art Wood, former Secret Service agent, Natalie Holloway, case investigator. Who put the body on the boat and took the boat out, Art? What do you think? I know what you're going to say.
Well, I know who did it. I mean, it was Paul Sanders Sloat with the help of the Gottenbossers, whether it was Coon Gottenboss and his father, or just the father, or the father and son. It was that boat, and they did it.
How has the search for Natalie been? I know there was some financial problems. The deep water search stopped, for lack of a better term, but they marked many, many, many different spots. Have you heard anything more about that?
Well, actually, they still have plans to go back and search over 100 spots that are marked. But quite frankly, Dana, I'm not encouraged. I'm not encouraged because they haven't raised enough money to pay for the divers. I'm not encouraged because the more time that goes by, there could be less and less left, even if it was in a crab trap.
Yeah, absolutely. Art, do you see this case going to trial in the near future, or will you and I be talking about this in a year?
Listen, Dana, I've told you this 1,000 times. There's more evidence that to convict Jørgen Vandersloot in this case than there ever was against Scott Peterson. The only difference is that this is in Aruba. I don't know what's going to happen. I can't imagine why the prosecutor hasn't gone forward.
Well, that's.
So I don't have any prediction. I only know that the whole world knows that he did it.
Something interesting, just before I let you go, Art, is, and I don't think I've heard it in the media except from you, is that we heard lots about computer analysts looking at the computers of Jørgen and Paulus Vandersloot and all of that, and usually a computer is a good piece of evidence, a good tracking point as far as what really happened. There's some interesting evidence that was found on Paulus Vandersloot's computer, was there not?
Absolutely. It absolutely convinced me that Paulus Vandersloot is the person that Jørgen called to help him get rid of the body. When he says he called his friend, I didn't believe a word of it. But he says, Dana, listen, I think I've repeated this to you before. But he says, when his friend showed up, he said, oh, you must go home. I'll take care of this. Anyway, the conversation was father to son. It absolutely convinced me that it was Paulus that he called. And that information, corresponding with what happened with Paulus' computer, convinced me that Paulus is the person that got rid of the body. There's no doubt in my mind.
I couldn't agree more. Listen, Art, I appreciate this. I know you're following the case closely, and you and I will talk again soon.
All right. Take care, Dana.
Okay. Bye-bye.
Thanks for having me.
No problem. Bye-bye. That's Art Wood, former Secret Service agent. Investigator involved in the disappearance of Natalie Holloway. What I thought I'd do now for the next 10 minutes or so is open up the phone line, and we don't do this often on the program here, but I think that it's an important enough topic that we'll do some open phones before we bring Jossie Mansour on to get the perspective of he and his newspaper Diario, and get your thoughts on the third anniversary. I know we're a little over it, but the third anniversary of the disappearance of Natalie Holloway, and still no answers. But I'll take that back and say, yeah, there are lots of answers. We've seen them, and Art Wood just said it very well, I believe. You know, he said it over and over and over again, and he was getting a little excited, and I understand where he's coming from. You know, how many times do you have to, you know, bark like a dog before people are going to say, you're a dog? 306-842-7884. 306-842-7884. Just a minute or so, 30 seconds, whatever you want to call, and give me your thoughts, your impression on 3 years later, the Natalie Holloway investigation. Of course, this show is podcast, so if you're not listening live, I ask that you not call. Only those that are out there listening live, and we'll take a few calls for the next 8 minutes or so. I won't keep you on the air long, just long enough for me to take your opinion and your impression on why is this gone, 3 years? Clint Van Zandt said it best, Ramsey's, 10 years. Other cases have gone that long. You know, all we can do is hope and pray that it won't go that long and that, at minimum, find Natalie, bring her home, take her back to Alabama, where she belongs, and, will there ever be a fair shake on the island of Aruba? I'm not sure. It certainly looks like there won't be. I kind of, I hate to say it and hate to give up hope, but as far as getting a proper conclusion to the investigation, besides finding Natalie, is, I would love to see it, but I'm not sure it's going to happen. 306-842-7884. Hi, caller. Where are you calling from?
Chicago, Illinois.
How's things in the Windy City?
A little too cold.
Is it? Yeah. Here we are, 3 years later. I wish there was some kind of a magic wand that I could wave, but it's almost to the point we're hearing nothing about the case in the media. We're seeing a little bit, and if it wasn't for the group at Scared Monkeys, including yourself, I don't think there would be any information out there, at least nothing that's productive or informative. Your thoughts?
I think that the monkeys were in contact with people in Aruba. They made some friends.
Yes.
There were some, whether it be Jossie or someone else that they were in touch with, people who could translate articles. So they were able to keep the information coming. And even though a lot of times that information wasn't true and accurate, at least we knew what lies they were telling.
I never thought of it that way, but yeah, very good point.
Well, but yeah, if somebody's out there lying about it, you want to know that too, so you know what disinformation you have to deal with.
I don't mean to interrupt, but there's that, and I don't like to talk about them much, but there's that dark side. There's that side that, I think Clinton used the analogy of the TWA flight and the reporters that were saying that it was shot down by a Navy missile. And it, obviously not to that extent here, but we always see that dark side. Someone who's always trying to spin the story a different way, but really not trying to help find a conclusion to it. Will those type of people ever go away? I don't think so.
Yeah. Well, you see that in every walk of life and, in every circumstance, not just a missing person. But I think in Aruba, and you mentioned Clint's comments about conspiracies. I think there were a small number of people who actually know what happened to evidence and things like that.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think there are a small number of people who know. I think a lot of other people think they know, suspect, but they don't have anything concrete. They can't nail the people who covered this up.
Right. Oh, yeah. No, I agree. Yeah, whether it's four people, five people, whether it's from the top dog at the police service to a government person, definitely they stepped both feet into a pile that they wanted to get out of, and they still haven't been able to step out of it, and it's made them look really bad. Does that mean there was a conspiracy? Possibly. Does that mean that they absolutely screwed this case up from day one? You bet. That's 100% for sure.
Yeah, I don't know that. I know art is encouraging, but I don't know that Joran is ever going to be brought to trial on this.
I agree with you.
I do think that Joran is going to end up in jail for something else.
Yep.
I think he's a loose cannon.
Yep. And, Clint mentioned all the young kids that are still going to Carlos and Charlie's, and there's those, the predators, whoever they may be, are just sitting back waiting for them. Thanks for calling.
Okay, bye-bye.
Take care, bye-bye. 306-842-7884. We'll take a couple of more calls before we join up with Jossie Mansour in Aruba to get his thoughts on the third anniversary. And guy, you hate to use that term anniversary. Isn't an anniversary something to to celebrate? Well, maybe not. I'm not sure. But, you know, it's been 3 years. It's been 3 years too many. From the investigative perspective, the first 24 or 48 hours of this case, and, you know, I hate sounding like a broken record, was so important, was so absolutely important to have a competent investigation, to use the evidence that was there, including confessions, properly, to, well, you name it. And, yeah, are all cases solved? Do some murder cases, cold cases, go years and years and years and years before? Yeah, absolutely. And will that happen here? Possibly. And will eventually we see a conclusion to this case? Hope so. But the negatives have been so out there with this case. The negatives have been so forefront with this case that we can't help but be critical. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello.
Hello, you're on the air.
Yes, hi. Dana?
Yes.
Hi, Dana. This is Ophir.
How are you doing?
I'm doing great. How are you?
I'm doing fine. And maybe you should introduce yourself to my audience for those that don't know who you are.
Okay. Well, my name is Ophir Engel. I have written a song in 2006 to Natalie. And I was actually really, I always myself feeling really hurt and for the family, and I really felt closer, and I wrote a song that, you know, demonstrate the power and the thoughts and the feeling of this case, and then I released it to the blogs for Natalie,
right.
Which is the blog that talks about all the whole case. And from there it spread. A lot of people heard it, you know, received emails about it. And that was on your show, remember?
Right, yeah, absolutely, yep.
And then we featured the song a couple of times. I performed it in my shows as well. I still feel very strong about the whole thing, and I released another version of it, which I send you a copy.
Yes.
And I post it online and send it to the blogs as well. And there are other blogs that also know about the song. I really hope you will play it, because everything you discussed with Clint, you know, it's within my song.
Right, absolutely. And I want you to share your website for people that may not be listening live that may want to go and check it out to hear.
Yeah, well, they can go to my site, which is my community site. It's called myspace.com/Ophironit, Ophir, O-F-I-R-O-N-I-T.
Okay.
I have R in the middle for Ophir and Ronit, so Ophironit. And they can listen to the song. There are two versions there. The first version on top, which is starting when they open the site automatically. And then they have the old one, the old song from 06, on the same player as well.
Okay. All right. Thank you for calling.
Yeah, and can I say a couple words?
Sure.
Yeah, first of all, you know, I'm really thrilled that there's a lot of people out there that they don't leave the subject alone, because it's very important to tell people about this case so people don't forget about Natalie. This is very important issue, and also for society, you know. We just can't just bypass it and... You know, what's happening down in Aruba, I hope they hear this song as well, because nothing is going away. And you and I and everybody knows that it's only time, just a matter of time, before we know the real truth, you know?
Yeah, that's so true.
The one skies, and we will get the truth one day.
That's so true. Thank you for calling.
Pretty powerful. All right, thank you very much.
Okay, bye-bye.
Bye.
And just an email that came in. While we were taking that call, it says there is indeed a search being conducted currently at a pond in the Montserrat area. I hope I'm pronouncing that right, but I'm probably not. However, it is entirely a private search. It has nothing to do with the Natalie Holloway case. The police and prosecutor's office are not involved anyway with this search. No crime scene investigators have arrived from the Netherlands. And this comes from a listener who has been in contact with someone from Aruba, and they're involved with the investigation, the prosecutor's office. So, again, you know, you hear things, and it's, well, one thing to say for sure with the Holloway investigation is you have to see it to believe it. And even when you see it and hear it, you know, it's a coin toss to see if it's exactly true or not. But we all know one thing that we all believe is true, and that was the investigation and the undercover work that was done regarding Joran van der Sloot and the Peter DeVries program. We're going to take a break, and we'll be back here in a couple of minutes with Jossie Mansour from Aruba. You're listening to the Dana Pretzer Show here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You're listening to Scared Monkeys Radio. Once again, here's your host, Dana Pretzer.
Okay, we're back, and our continuing investigation into the third year of the disappearance of Natalie Holloway on the island of Aruba. And, of course, over the years, our go-to guy in Aruba is the managing editor of Diario, Jossie Mansour. Welcome back to the program, Jossie.
Thank you.
It's been 3 years. You and I have interviewed many times on this program. Did you ever think that 3 years later we'd still be talking about this case?
Well, that we're talking about it is a surprise to me, because it should have been solved from the beginning. The thing is that it was so badly mishandled that we're 3 years into the investigations, and still we don't have anything positive that's come out of it.
It seems like the information that comes out, we seem to see it, we get excited about it, and then all of a sudden it disappears. And that goes right down to the, you know, the confession on the DeVries program, to, you know, the arrests and rearrests. But there's been some information recently that your paper has reported on, and there was a single shoe found, and many of my listeners have emailed me asking you to asking me to ask you to clarify the story about the shoe that was found and any possible connection to this case.
Well, you know, that shoe was found by someone else, and they called in, and one of our reporters, a star reporter of ours, went there. He took a photo of the shoe. The shoe is very similar to the shoes that Joran normally wears. He called in to the police. The police went the next day, picked up the shoe, and they still have it. So what they're doing with it, we don't know. We plan to call them again very soon. We're just giving them the sufficient time to investigate whatever they're going to investigate with regards to the shoe. But it does seem very similar to the shoes that Joran normally wears.
Do you have any idea as far as the size of the shoe, Jossie?
No, we don't. We asked the police to tell us, and we're still waiting for an answer.
Now, your reporter, did he have any opinion as far as the shoe? Were there any stains or anything on the shoe that may have been, you know, unusual?
No, I haven't spoken to him about that, but I would imagine that after 3 years of the weather, sun, rain, everything, I mean, whatever was on that shoe could have been washed away a long time ago. The similarity would match if the sizes match, and if someone recognizes the shoe as belonging to Joran, because he himself will never recognize it.
Oh, absolutely. Now, where, just to clarify for my audience, Jossie, was the shoe found?
It was found, you know, very near the lighthouse. It was found to the west of the lighthouse towards the ocean. It was found hidden or stuck within some crevices and the rocks that we have there. It's a rocky terrain.
Has that area been searched previously for Natalie? Are there caves or any sort of crevices that maybe were just never looked at before? I know the island was gone over from stem to stern many times, but this does seem interesting when the shoe is found.
Well, you know, as far as we know, and we follow this case from the beginning, the searches always took place to the north of the lighthouse and to the east of it.
Mm-hmm.
To the west of it, very little. And this shoe was found to the west of it, in the direction of the hotels, or to have a better orientation towards the ocean, to the west coast.
One of my previous guests mentioned that, and I've seen some stories on this, in fact, a response from the Aruban prosecutor's office about another pond that's been drained, and as far as the search of it. Do you know anything about that and if there's any connection to this case?
No, I don't. I've heard some rumors that some kind of a pond, a small pond, was searched, that was drained. For whatever reason, I don't know, because in the last few weeks or months, we have had some other people missing, at least one that we know of.
Right.
And maybe they were looking for him, and they're still looking for him somewhere. Maybe that's the reason why they drained that pond.
Yeah,
I don't think it has any relationship to the Natalie Holloway case.
There's been a report in your paper about the Officer Maduro case. Maybe you could shed some light on that as far as the question of the credibility of this officer.
Well, you know, we have absolutely no faith, no trust in this officer. I mean, in the beginning, I had a lot of confidence in Mr. Moss. He is the major prosecutor in this case and in many other cases. But from what's come forward after that, I mean, we've lost all faith in him, and that he's not partial anymore, that he's more or less politically influenced, that he will not prosecute anything that has anything to do with the people in government. He will only go towards the people in the opposition. And that creates a bad feeling amongst us here.
Moss has come under many different criticisms regarding this case, most recently with some of his press reports talking about the Vandersloot case, and then, you know, doing a 360-degree turn and coming out with something else, and now basically not saying anything about it. There is a confidence issue, obviously, in the police and in the prosecutor's office. Has there been anything from either side as far as the Holloway investigation?
No, we're not hearing anything from them. I mean, they always pretend. I mean, that's what they say to the public, that they're still investigating the case. But we don't have any positive results from that. We don't have any positive communications from them. They're not saying anything or revealing anything that they're doing. And if you ask me personally, my opinion is they're not doing anything.
Yeah, that's true, because it's been very quiet. Jossie Manster is here. He's the managing editor of Diario. Jossie, there's been some press reports, and I'm not sure if you can comment or want to comment on them. And again, we've seen this pretty much since day one of this case, about phone records and Beth Holloway, and that she was on her way to Aruba before Natalie was even reported missing, and things like that. Are you hearing any more of this, or is it just the same old, same old?
No, I think that all that has disappeared ever since that tape came forward. You know, the tape from Holland that has the confession of Joran as to how the girl died in his arms and how he called a friend to help him dispose of the body, etc., etc. Ever since that day, there's been a change in that attitude. So they're not talking anymore. There's no negative sounds or noises coming from anyone or anywhere with regards to Beth or the rest of the Holloway family.
The Aruban people have gone through quite a production when it comes to public relations and the island of Aruba, and you and I have discussed this many times, Jossie, as far as the people. They're good people. Obviously, this case wasn't handled right, and we have credibility questions as far as the police and the government, but if you were to talk to an everyday Aruban today and ask them about Natalie Holloway 3 years later, what do you think their comment would be?
I think the comment would be that some of them still claim that the girl may be alive somewhere. Most of them know what happened to her, only they don't have any proofs like we don't. So I think that their attitude towards it has changed quite a bit ever since they saw the confession of Joran. They don't hold the family responsible anymore for anything except the boycott that they're always mentioning. And if you put that aside, I think that the feelings have changed 100% towards sympathy towards the family.
Yeah, absolutely. Jossie Manser from Diario, thank you, sir.
You're welcome.
Take care. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Well, you know, here we are 3 years later, and we have about 3 minutes left in the program. Time for one call, 1-306-842-7884. Certainly a different perspective from each one of my guests this evening. The confidence of Artwood that there will be closure to the thoroughness of Clint Van Zandt to say, well, you know, how much more do you have to do to get an answer? And it seems like answers will never come to Jossie Mansour, who has been, you know, the rock as far as reporting the information. And now even Hans Moss has become questioned as far as his credibility goes. You know, you heard Jossie say he's interested in prosecuting some cases, but not others. Now, I'm not sure about that. I don't know enough about those cases. But one thing is for sure is that the Natalie Holloway investigation, now 3 years plus, they may say is open, but is kind of just floating around there. Do we all hope that there will be breaking news on Scared Monkey someday, that Natalie is found and this case is going to court? Absolutely. We can't argue with that at all. We'll take one more call and then call it an evening. Hi, you're on the air.
Good evening, Dana. It's Anna in Alabama.
How are you doing?
How are you today?
I'm great. How's your weather there? Are you running into the tornadoes and stuff?
Sunny skies in the 90s.
Oh, wow.
Very warm. I had one comment to make on the three-year anniversary, if we're going to call it that.
Yeah, I hate using that term, but...
Yeah. The thing that makes me so furious is the way that ALE now and the prosecutor say they have to have forensic evidence.
Yeah.
Yet that is the very kind they refused to collect in the beginning.
Yep.
That makes no sense. How can that be? If that is all that is acceptable in the Aruban courts, that should have been what they were going for first and foremost. And instead, that's the very thing they refused to collect.
No, and it's true, and we've done the shows about the evidence that was collected that disappeared, and it's just so sad. And you know, I wasn't making fun of the song, but there's a song called Sweet Home Alabama, and that's definitely where Natalie belongs right now.
And that's where we want her to.
Absolutely. Thank you.
You're welcome.
Okay, bye-bye. All right, the webpage, www.scaredmonkeysradio.com. You can hear podcasts of this program and others, my daily commentary, and, of course, listen to the show live. I want to thank all my guests this evening, Clint Van Zandt, Art Wood, and Jossie Mansour. My name's Dana Pretzer. This is the Dana Pretzer Show, and we'll see you again real soon here on Scared Monkeys Radio.
You've been listening to the Dana Pretzer Show on Scared Monkeys Radio. We invite you to discuss tonight's program with other listeners by joining us at scaredmonkeysradio.com, where you'll find program archives, links to tonight's guest websites, and further information regarding tonight's topics. Scared Monkeys Radio is a production of scaredmonkeys.com. Thanks for listening.